firefighters.
Committee on Finance and Revenue is open. Good morning, everyone. We're going to start with, this is our CPA day. We're going to walk through the updates in law while I'm hearing Senate Bill 701, and I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 701, the Reconnect Bill. And before we get going, we'll call Christina up to give us a summary on the actual legislation and how this weaves together.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 701 has to do with the annual connection to the Internal Revenue Code, and it changes the provisions from December 31st, 2015 to December 31st, 2016. So basically, it goes through anywhere in statute that references the personal income tax or Internal Revenue Code and updates those references. So it affects some things about the PERS system, links to a federal law that establishes taxable income, affects annual benefits payable to members, and specifies rules around minimum distribution requirements under certain circumstances. Also relates to benefits and services credit for a period in the uniform services. It updates the connection to the federal code that defines shareholders and S corporations who may represent their companies in proceedings before the tax court magistrate or the Department of Revenue. Also updates the connection to the Internal Revenue Code and defines which organizations may qualify for consideration for a charitable tax checkoff, and updates statutes governing the Oregon College Savings Plan, individual development accounts, and unemployment insurance, and that just makes it connect to the latest version of the Internal Revenue Code as of December 31st, 2016. And so Oregon historically has a rolling reconnect, and that is just where it's tied to the federal definition of taxable income. And so other ties to federal tax law must be updated on a regular basis, and December 31st is the usual connection date. The legislature adopted the rolling reconnect for tax years 1997 to 2002, and then suspended the policy for tax years 2003 to 2005. The rolling reconnect was reestablished for years 2006 to 2008, and then has been reinstated at this time. So the rolling reconnect is in effect at this point. So any changes to federal taxable income will affect Oregon's revenue stream. And the CPAs are here to talk about that today.
Okay, thanks. And the actual changes in 701 are really just where it changes from 2015 to 2016.
Yes.
And so the only other changes then that would affect Oregon taxpayers would be the one, the federal changes that we would reconnect or connect to. So so I always look forward to this day in the Revenue Committee where we walk through our book of federal changes with our favorite CPAs. And so let me call up Heather Jackson and Susanna Legg.
Doesn't look as thick as you do.
No. Thanks for coming up here and helping us with this. This is we're in your season right now, and you probably have other fish to fry. So,
all right. Good morning, Chair Senator Haas, Vice Chair Senator Borkus, and members of the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. For the record, my name is Heather Jackson. I'm the chair of the Oregon Society of CPAs Taxation Committee. I'm a certified public accountant with Dougal Conradi LLC in Portland, Oregon, and I appreciate this opportunity to participate in this today. On behalf of over 7,500 members in the OSCPA, I respectfully testify related to Senate Bill 701. Senator Haas, members of the committee, we are bringing to you the changes that we have seen from the federal legislative changes that have been enacted since you guys adjourned in 2016. We are highlighting the four new acts and the prior year acts which are taking effect in 2016 and beyond. We are here to be a technical resource and promote taxpayer compliance by trying to keep Oregon tax law tied to the Internal Revenue Code. We have broken down the acts, as we have in the past, into our five parts, A to E. A is the general reconnect, which is an automatic reconnect. Letter B is no change necessary. These provisions affect credits, penalties, and administrative rules on the IRS. Section C is ODR change necessary to conform with federal tax provisions. D is no ODR change necessary. These reference code but do not impact tax law. And finally, Section E, this act may reference the code but may not impact tax law. So we're going to go ahead and start on Section A. So the ones with the stars next to them are the new codes, so that we could define between the new codes and the code or the acts that you saw last year. We're going to start with Code Section 106G. Starting 1117, reimbursements from employer HRAs are excluded from gross income only if the employee had essential minimum coverage, which is a change. On to Code Section 704. Starting 1116, Olympians with adjusted gross income of under $1 million can exclude the word income from their taxes. And on to the older ones, 108A1E, the home mortgage debt forgiveness ended 12/31/16, so it has ended, as has the mortgage insurance premium deduction, which it was also working through 2016. The 7-year recovery for motorsports entertainment complexes has ended as of December 31st, 2016.
That's always one of our favorites.
Yes.
Don't you remember we had that big argument over in Eastern Oregon?
Yeah.
For two sessions?
Yeah. Code Section 168J8, accelerated depreciation for Indian Reserve property ended 12/31/16. The 179D, energy efficient buildings deduction has ended as of 12/31/16. Let's see here. Election to expense costs of qualifying mining equipment, qualified film and television ended 12/31/16. One that will get your attention is the qualified tuition deduction, code section 222E, has ended and has not been extended yet. Code section 831, insurance companies' premiums increased from $1.2 million to $2.2 million. With an annual inflation adjustment starting in 1117. The Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015, code section 771 to 777. The Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act, and electing large partnership audit provisions, has been repealed and replaced with a single set of audit rules. Each partnership will designate a partner to bind the partnership and the partners under an audit. That is.
Good morning, Chair Senator Haas and Vice Chair Senator Boquist, members of the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. For the record, my name is Susanna Leidick. I'm a member of Oregon Society's Public Accountants. They're on their taxation committee. I'm an accountant in public practice in Oregon, in Portland, and I appreciate the opportunity to participate today. So on behalf of over 4,500 members of the OSCPA, I respectfully testify related to Senate Bill 701, and I will be discussing Section B with you. Section B, if you recall from Heather's introduction, is that changes to the code but do not necessarily require any action for Oregon statutes to reconnect. They'll reconnect automatically. There is a new law on page 5 that relates to HRAs. which are the health reimbursement arrangements that are typically utilized with some smaller employers. In particular, the three changes that are discussed in here is a premium tax credit associated with that that will be extended to eligible taxpayers, and setting up some thresholds around rules for determining the amount of credit. That's 36B. 9831 allows the small employer health reimbursement arrangements to not be treated as a group health plan, which provides relief for those. They were previously under those provisions, in that they won't be assessed any of the penalty excise tax that would otherwise be imposed on group health plans that didn't meet some of the ACA market reform requirements. The last provision on the page that's part of the new act relates to information notices that the small employers are, that are providing HRAs are required to provide their employees. It essentially gives them the information that they need to go on the marketplace to obtain their insurance through the exchange, and is kind of related to the W-2 reporting that you customarily see with the, some of that. On the next page, we have a change in an increase in penalties for failing to timely file. It passed with other laws that relate on protecting taxpayer information and confidentiality. So it takes an existing penalty and merely raises it. That's 6651. And that kind of ends the new tax acts that are in my section. And we kind of move on to the provisions that we're highlighting this year because there was so many that were expiring that weren't renewed. There's, I think, 36 different provisions that expired. I have 11 of these for you on the next few pages. They mostly relate to renewable energy and fuel incentives, but there's a few that relate are employment related, such as the Indian Employment Credit and the Empowerment Zones. Those move through over to page 9. And if you like, I can go over them individually, but I don't know that any necessarily were of particular interest. On page 9 through page 13, we've highlighted provisions that were enacted last year and are going into effect this year or the next year. One of them is 856. It's limits on REITs relating to the percentage of value of interest that they can hold in taxable REIT subsidiaries. Also have some of the provisions that Heather discussed regarding partnerships, one of those being consistency in reporting. That's 631B. Consistency requirements that when an individual reports partnership items on their return, it's requiring consistency for all items of income, gain, loss, deduction, or credit that are passed through or come sourced from the partnership. That is a change that goes into effect as of at the end of 17, so it'll be new for 18. And then there's a slightly different provision, but relating to the audit laws for the partnerships and where those were repealed and some new rules were put in place. On page 10, section 645, the penalties for providing incorrect information on information returns related to securities were updated, and that has to do with financial institutions that provide statements reporting the basis in the securities when they've been transacted. 6402 is the provision, provides additional time for the IRS to review refund claims based on the earned income tax credit and the refundable portions of the child tax credit.
Do you want to wait for questions to the end?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry?
Nothing. We're just mumbling amongst ourselves. Thank you.
I got you. I understand. That particular provision would have an impact on Oregon to the point that when the IRS opens up a return, for audit, it's extensive periods that things may change on the Oregon state return for, related to the taxpayer if returns are opened. So, or if the statute of limitations is extended. 6721 and 6722 relate to safe harbor for errors on information returns, and the act increased the penalties for the failure to file correct information on those statements. On page 11, 25D is a residential energy credit. So this is one that didn't necessarily go away as or wasn't renewed, but it was extended through 2021, but there's phase outs that start in 2019. And it's only related to solar property, fuel cells and wind energy and some of the geothermal heat pump. Those provisions were left to expire. 6050, additional mortgage interest reporting requirements. apply to the information returns that people receiving interest payments on mortgages that they've made or funded, and the information that they have to can report back relating to specifically outstanding amounts of principal and the address of the property. So that information kind of, more information is being provided to the government at that point. 6412 extends the excise taxes on highway motor fuels, retail sales taxes on heavy highway vehicles, and manufacturer's excise tax on heavy vehicle tires through 2022. The annual excise tax on heavy vehicles was extended through 2023. On page 12, we have the Bipartisan Budget Act sections. These were kind of discussed in Heather's parts as well, so I won't go over them in specific detail, but they're relating to the partnership reporting and auditing requirements that we've discussed. The trade preferences extension of 2015, section 7527, the Internal Revenue Service must reestablish program for advanced payment of health care tax credit directly to health insurance providers. It was something that they had had in the past, but had the program had expired, or so they were directed to extend that or come up with something new to replace it. On page 13, section 72T, a penalty-free early plan withdrawals for certain public safety officers was expanded to include some others within the definition of a public safety officer, and this would allow them to make withdrawals from the retirement plans penalty-free without that 10% penalty provision. And that takes us through the end of Section B, where there would be changes that would require reconnects, or changes that don't require Oregon statutes to be changed, modified to reconnect.
All right. On to Section C, where these are ones that we consider ODR changes necessary. We'll start with the new one, the Combat Injured Veterans Act. This relates to refunds of withholding amounts paid after 1/17 of 91 on severance payments to veterans with combat injuries. The 3-year statute of limitations to amend a tax return has been extended for people to go back all the way to then to get their refunds of all the withheld money. The Protecting Americans from Tax Hikes Act of 2015. This is the Domestic Production Activities Deduction, DPAD. Puerto Rico has been extended through 12/31/16. And on page 15, the 2016 Consolidated Apportionment Act, 75% of oil transportation costs can be excluded from net income from the DPAD when calculations. Those are the three that we had for considering change. On to Section D. No ODR changes necessary. This is the bipartisan Budget Act of 2015. There's many different sections here, but summary is these changes are for the lawsuit of assessment and collections at the IRS level, which has no impact to Oregon.
And then we're on our last section, Section E. These acts reference tax code, but may not impact income tax law. There was no new provisions in this section, but review of provisions that have either expired or are taking effect in 17 or 18. The mostly are all related to excise tax. The medical device excise tax, for example, is still suspended through 2017. However, the excise tax credits relating to renewable and alternative fuels weren't extended. On page 18, we have various excise taxes relating to fuel, tires, heavy trucks, and trailers, and the highway use tax that were extended through 2022 last year. And that more or less kind of concludes the analysis that was that we've provided for the committee. The only provisions that came to mind with some of the things that are expiring that weren't included within the analysis, there was two other provisions. One was railroad track maintenance credit that used to give railroad companies 50% of the expenses that they spent on maintaining tracks. That was allowed to expire, wasn't extended. It's a federal credit, but might impact some of your constituents. And then the special rate for qualified timber gains. Federally, they were allowed to kind of have those. Certain cutting of timber was afforded capital gains treatment federally. Oregon's always disconnected from that, but that provision federally has gone away, or at least wasn't extended. But that kind of concludes the information or things that we have.
Yes, thank you. We're still sort of a little bit in mourning up here for the loss of the Motorsports Raceway deduction. So, but I think we do have a couple of questions. Senator Boquist?
I have six questions, Mr. Chair. thank you very much, Mr. Chair. If you go back to page 3, could you walk through either ladies or economist the present status, if anybody knows, the qualified tuition deduction, which of course has not been renewed as of yet, but of course has a significant impact on higher education in Oregon, hence tuition, hence revenue, hence so on and so forth. Does anybody know anything about, I mean, it's not been extended, is it under discussion in the Congress? Is this typical that, you know, we wait to the last minute like we used to do with Section 179 before we do anything? Can you give us any background on that particular tuition deduction?
As of last night, I haven't seen anything that has said one way or another whether they're looking at it or not, and they have not extended it. If it'll get thrown in at the last minute with all the interesting stuff going on at the Hill, I'm not sure.
And we're not asking you to speculate on what may happen, that's for sure.
Do you know anything more?
No.
I would just point out, Mr. Chairman, that's something we probably, and we have consistently passed track to try and keep track of what they're doing, considering the fact that that has a major financial impact on people who are paying for their kids to go to school, so on and so forth. Next question, Mr. Chair.
He says, as a college parent, several times over. Go ahead.
On page 10, if you would be kind enough, make sure I go to page 10 myself. Would you explain further, since this is another one of our pet peeves in this committee, provisions that provide additional time for the IRS to review the earned income tax credit? Are we talking about audits? Are we talking about they flag them, since this is in fact a fairly significant tax credit at the state level and the federal level too. Is this about auditing individuals selected for audits, or is this about the IRS just having more time? Some background here, please.
The provision allows additional time for the IRS to review refund claims. So it's going to be like claims that have been asserted or filed. And it's the objective to reduce fraud and identify improper payments. I don't know if that will be like a limited scope audit, where which is normally an engagement where they agree not to look at other aspects of the returns and essentially not open those line items up for examination, and just look to the credit for adjustment, which I would need to. I'm confident that Oregon probably follows suit, but I can speak from experience of working with this in Arizona statutorily, that those limited scope audits that happen federally don't necessarily have the same impact on the state return. So when a taxpayer would sign a waiver that would extend the assessment period with the IRS to look at aspects of their return, that automatically extends the assessment period or the period which they can report changes at the state level. It is a two-way street where Oregon auditors would be, if the return is open federally, where the taxpayer can have additional tax due or file a refund claim, and they're allowed to come down to Oregon and assert the same thing. It's a two-way street where Oregon auditors can also review the refund claims, or statutes open for them as well to examine items. Does that help answer your question?
Absolutely not, but that's okay.
One of the other things is they, as you've heard, the federal government isn't issuing refunds for anybody that claimed these credits until this week, when they've had time to get the 1099s in and some information that they can verify. So I know they are delaying actual processing of the returns. I'm not sure how Oregon's handling them, because I know in our firm we're just not filing those people yet until we can actually potentially get the refunds.
Mr. Chair, I would ask staff to review this in light of the Kenny Geyer plan and all of the other things that we have. I mean, these are basically anti-poverty programs, and if you're just going to starve everybody to death with, you know, IRS and That's DOR delays, then this is not the best mechanism to do it. I realize this is the federal level, and they don't really care about us in Oregon, but at the state level, we have the same sort of series, and we've discussed this already this session in terms of, you know, the intent of this program, so on and so forth. So if staff could review this a little bit more and then find out what we're doing at the state level and the impacts, it would be appreciated, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Bertschinger, you were highlighting and taking notes madly during this presentation.
Just the ones that strike me, but I've got a pretty good understanding.
Okay.
Next question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. I thought you were done.
Page 14. The DOD veterans severance payments back to 1991. I would assume, and any of the three of you ladies could jump onto this question right here, I would assume that most individuals would have filed their taxes and gotten their, and found out that they didn't owe this or gotten a refund. So is, even though this goes back to 1991, how broad is this? Generally, the tax return would have been filed, somebody would have known. It doesn't look like this is, in fact, this was a withholdings issue, and if they didn't owe taxes, then they probably would have got the withholdings back. So is there any clarification on this and the impact to the state of Oregon? Because 1991 is, in fact, a few years ago.
Let's see here.
Or do we need to ask DOR to come back and tell us, is this a problem in Oregon beyond 3 years?
Could come up. I don't know how prevalent it will be, just because if a person was pretty low income, they would have gotten all the money back anyway. It could be if there's multiple things going on in their return and they wouldn't have gotten the money back, then they could go back and get it now. So if their income's high enough or whatever, they may not have gotten all the money back that was withheld from this said money. That's the money you're looking at. The impact, I don't know, but
Mr. Chair, since it goes back to 1991, I think we need LRO to look at this. I don't believe it's very large, because first, the severance payments aren't large, and second, just because it was deducted, many of these people that I'm aware of actually got their money back anyway. But it is a red flag. Next question, Mr. Chair. On page 15, oil refineries, transportation costs. It says independent oil refiners can include 75% of oil transportation costs. And, of course, then we jump over to pipeline tariffs, rail costs, tanker fees, so on and so forth. And, of course, I hate to say this, but I'm just trying to be fair. You know, we have oil trains and things like that. Is this just refiners, or is this general transportation costs that's in here? Or do you know?
My understanding of this bill is it's oil refiners that get it, and it's for the DPAD calculation only, which Oregon has disconnected from.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Page 17. I do realize that some of these have gone away, but alternative fuel tax and alternative fuel mixture excise tax credits not extended to 2017, and then the excise tax for biofuels, which is not extended to 17, but does go through 2017. And this sort of jumped out. Existing dollar per gallon tax credit for biodiesel mixing. I know this is probably well over your head because we don't have a lot of these tax returns, but this is a big bloody deal at a dollar per gallon. Can you provide any enlightenment on this particular tax credit?
So, I'm sorry, 64-2016, 64-27E?
24-26, 24-27. Excise tax credits for biodiesel and renewable fuel. And then the next one, of course, is blending, which if you don't know or you don't follow the news, I mean, low carbon fuel standard, you know, is center mass of this particular tax credit, and I was not aware that there was such a huge tax credit. And you both look like deer in the headlights, so, Mr.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I would like to ask that Mazen follow up on this, because this does have an impact in the revenue discussions relating to fuels. And having said that, the entire rest of page 17 and 18 that have to do with excise taxes on highway fund, I would again like to have Mazen follow up on these so that we can be enlightened in reference of our discussions of what is highway, what is not highway, and what are the tax implications from the state and the federal side before we all have to vote on some other revenue-generating package for transportation.
Okay.
And I'm done, Mr. Chair. Ready to quit.
Appreciate your diligence on those transportation issues. When is that going to be ready, by the way?
Mr. Chair, I don't think you want to be so excited about it 18 and 36 minutes at this point. But we are meeting this afternoon. Another work group I'm in.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions of our CPAs on the Reconnect bill? Thank you so much for studying this and going through it with us.
Thank you.
Very good. All right. Do we have anyone else signed up to testify on Senate Bill 701?
There's somebody in the back.
Here, clock.
Chair Haas and members of the committee, I'm Claire Clock. I'm a semi-retired conservation specialist, and I'm a fully retired conservation farmer, berry farmer, and very glad that I wasn't out putting up marionberries and blueberries this winter when it was frozen for 2 months. Anyway, I'm new at the legislative thing. I only came last time into the legislature, last session, and so I'm just learning this. And I haven't talked before the Finance Committee before, but one of the things when I was looking through all the myriad of bills that were presented this year, I see the point of tax credits. And I'm wondering, there's one for a tax credit for that's coming up, tax credit for companies to plant trees that's already required by the Oregon Forest Practices Act. There's one that gives a tax credit for people that adopt animals from the shelter. And some of those, and then I start looking at all the rest of them, and then I start thinking of all the tax credits on back down the line, and then I see the budget thing, and I know that I'm in natural resources advocacy, but I like to advocate for my programs, but I'm starting to look and see, what if you didn't just take 10 or 15 or 20% off of those tax credits? I don't know how much it would be, if it would really make a difference in the budget, but just like Vice Chair Boquist says, some of these tax credits on the federal level were pretty large. But how about the state level? And I have no idea how to do that other than have you take a look through your budget of the accounting office and see those. But is that a possible not a possible for the whole budget deficit, but what we're looking for, shortfall. But maybe it'll help. And I know that this isn't going to be popular with most anybody because we all have our tax credits. And I'd got enough money to put on some energy, solars for my house, my barn.
We have a whole protocol of systems that review our state tax credits. And this committee, along with the House, will go through those. We have a whole system that goes through those.
That looks at them.
And they automatically go away unless we renew them. So
okay.
We're on it.
So, yes.
But I think we're going to move on and close out this hearing here.
Okay.
Thank you for coming up and giving us.
Yes, so I'll talk to your office about learning more about that process.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 701 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 251.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 251.
Lottery bill.
I move 251 to the floor with a due pass.
This is the bill we heard last week, brought to us by Senator Taylor. Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 251 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, just for the public, this is the changes the threshold for reporting and withdrawal, so on and so forth, for a lottery, and it is a good bill, should pass.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Burchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote for this, but I don't think it's the solution to our budget hole.
Further discussion?
It's true.
Objections? See none. Senate Bill 251 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Taylor, would you carry this bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair Haas. I'd be delighted to.
Thank you. I'm going to open up a work session for bill introduction. We have here LC 1154.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. We have a date on this thing. Mr. Chair, 1154. Mr. Chair, I move LC 1154, dated 12/16/16, to be introduced as a committee bill, and I'll speak to my motion.
Senator Boquist moves to introduce LC 1154 as a committee bill. Discussion, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The introduction of a legislative draft as a committee bill only brings it forward to the committee. It does not reflect a yes or a no vote or for or against vote. It simply opens the discussion for a particular topic. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Objections? Seeing none. The bill is introduced. Okay. That does it for our agenda today. Thank you, accountants. Thank you, committee. We will adjourn.